WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
From the beginning, there was always a gimmick. That's how food writer John Mariani begins his new book on the history of American restaurants. He goes on to say that the American restaurant is never merely a place to eat. It's a place to go, to see, to experience, to hang out in, to seduce in, and to be seduced. Good taste has as much to do with it all as bad taste, and there's plenty of both to go around in this story. Mariani is the food and travel writer for Esquire magazine and the author of the Dictionary of American Food and Drink. His new book, America Eats Out, isn't just about restaurants, it's about entrepreneurs and their gimmicks. As America grew, new opportunities opened up for clever restaurateurs.
By the time you get into the Wild West days, one of the most interesting of all characters, I think, in American food service is an Englishman named Fred Harvey. And his gimmick was to improve food service on the railroads, because the railroads, after the Civil War, crisscrossed America. And the towns of in the West, in Utah and Kansas and Colorado, were established overnight as railroad depots, and you were lucky if you could get anything to eat, and there were certainly no restaurants. And what he did, Fred Harvey, was to open spanking clean, wonderful restaurants manned by good chefs with changing menus, and, more important, he brought out tens of thousands of young women from the East who were called the Harvey Girls, and MGM made a movie about them, as a matter of fact, starring Angela Lansbury and Judy Garland. And he brought these women from the East into a Western landscape where the women in those days in food service would be pretty much bar girls and prostitutes in saloons and taverns. So that had a radical effect, and that was a great gimmick to have to be served by a waitress in a very white starched apron, which is all sent back to be laundered in Chicago, and to eat good food, and that was a great gimmick. So much of a gimmick that the Harvey restaurants never were expected to make any money for the railroad. But it was a gimmick to get people to travel on the railroad, which is where they made their money off the tickets.
Were you able to find anything out about why hotel food is so often bad or pretentious or too expensive, and why the hotels often have those like really big, large, hard, you know, cardboard kind of menus?
Yeah, the pretentiousness is due to the fact that they were, in the 19th century, almost invariably the best place in town, which is to say that there weren't many restaurants in Boston and Chicago and St. Louis, and certainly not out west. So hotels functioned as the only place to eat, and they copied this Delmonico's model of great opulence, especially in the Gilded and Victorian age. What happened in the 20th century is that even though some of the best restaurants in America are still in hotels, they never changed their style very much. And to eat in a grand hotel meant red brocade wallpaper and tassels on the menu and a whole lot of pretense, but the food itself went way downhill after World War II. They were using the frozen, and they were using the canned and the processed and the prepared foods. The unions made it very, very difficult for many hotel dining rooms to have great chefs and great cooks and good service. And because they were the only game in many towns and the only place you could eat, they took it for granted. A significant factor in the demise of hotel dining was the invention of the credit card, which is back in 1950-51 when Diners Club came out, which is just another gimmick that some guy thought up, who actually ran out of cash one day in a restaurant. And he thought of this Diners Club gimmick. And by the end of the year, he had a couple of hundred people. And the restaurants loved it because what it meant was that a businessman traveling to another city did not have to eat in his restaurant in the hotel where he could sign for it. And he didn't have to carry around a lot of cash. He could go to other restaurants around the city and just use his credit card. So that had that led to the demise of hotel dining rooms very rapidly.
You make the point that hamburgers, the American favorite, are now getting stiff competition from pizza. In my neighborhood, pizza was always a popular and favorite dish. But, you know, one thing I've noticed is that in more and more places, the pizza places, you know, the Italian family-run pizza place is getting replaced by the fast food chain pizza restaurant.
Yeah, this is a really awful development because the more Americanized that the pizza has become, and it is a Neapolitan invention, but was not known throughout Italy at all until well after World War II. There are more pizzerias here. But, you know, Pizza Hut, which came out of Wichita, Kansas in the 1950s, I believe, or 60s, Pizza Hut was as far from an Italian pizza as is possible to get. And yet Americans, especially in the Midwest, where it came from, love that sweet taste of the tomato sauce, love these disparate ingredients put on a not very good crust, and love the Pizza Hut taste. And that has kind of taken over the pizza industry, plus the fact that Domino's just really moved in big by promising they could get that pizza to you in under 30 minutes. But to find a good pizza of the kind you described, the family restaurant pizzeria, or some of the new kind of trendy pizzerias that do try to reproduce Italian pizzas, is not that easy to find anymore.
If you're just joining us, my guest is John Mariani, and he's the food and travel correspondent for Esquire magazine and the author of the new book, America Eats Out, which is a history of American restaurants, taverns, coffee shops, and so forth. What kind of restaurants did you go to when you were growing up?
Well, at least once a week, I grew up in the Bronx. And at least once a week, we would go to this, at the time, combination pizzeria and Italian restaurant. We would go into the city, into Manhattan, that is, which we call the city, even though I live in the Bronx. And we would go to places like Schraff's for lunch. And my parents loved to eat out. My father really did. And his wife, my mother, was a very, very good cook. So we would go to places that were kind of special. We never went for Chinese food. We never, very, very rarely went for French food, at least the children didn't. And I remember a place called Patricia Murphy's, which used to have several outlets up here in the Northeast, and where the great thing about it was you'd arrive with your family, and you'd give your name, and you'd wait to see if you were going to be put into the gold room, the silver room, the crystal room, or the peppermint room. And you'd wait with bated breath, and you'd hear, Mariani party to the gold room. You say, hey, we got the gold room today. You know? And this is all a gimmick, too, as I said in the book, that this was part of the gimmick. And you'd sit down, and had hot popovers were brought, and you had your own loaf of bread right there on the table. And these were all gimmicks. The food was not very good at Patricia Murphy's. But it brought carloads, if not busloads, of people in.
You have a couple of kids, right?
Two boys.
Where do you take them? Where'd you take them when they were even younger, if you wanted to eat out with the family?
Well, when my first son was born, we literally, when he was 3-4 months old, we just put him in a basket and cover him over. And most of the time he'd sleep, or you put him in a knapsack on your back. And we actually went to France and traveled to 2- and 3-star restaurants that way until one night he woke up, which was... But now we take them out all the time, but we choose restaurants that are children-friendly. And I don't mean fast food. I mean good Italian restaurants, Chinese restaurants, restaurants owned by families where they understand, restaurants that are fairly casual. I mean, I'm not going to take them to Le Bec Fan, or I'm not going to take them to Lutèce or places like that. They're simply not going to enjoy it. But I will certainly take them to a good steakhouse. And they enjoy the experience. I found with kids, if I can give one piece of advice to all of your listeners, when you take your children out, don't ask them what they want to eat, because invariably they'll say, you know what, pizza or hamburgers. What you should do is order a whole bunch of things and have it spread out on the table, and invariably, I guarantee you, they'll pick at this and that, the aromas will get to their nose, and they will end up eating things you couldn't imagine they would have ever eaten. And this is what we always do. We never let them order anymore. We just put, here's some veal, here's some scallops, here's some broccoli, here's some onion rings, and invariably they will eat 3 or 4 out of the things that are on the table.
And are you eating from the same plates?
Oh, yeah, sure.
When your kids were a little younger, what would you do if you took them to a restaurant and they started to act up?
Usually end off the meal as soon as is feasible. I mean, I would ask for the check and leave, because I don't think that anybody should... put up with that, parents and other people in the restaurant included. So if we're on our appetizer and the kids were acting up or something, we would just pay the check and then call it a night.
If you could go back in time, is there a particular restaurant you would have loved to have tried?
Oh, yeah, no question about it. There's a place which was called Le Pavillon, very important restaurant, which most people probably have never heard of, except what happened was, back in 1939, World's Fair, the French Pavilion had this restaurant called Le Pavillon. It was their pavilion. And it had standards of service and silverware and glassware and napery and linen and spectacularly good French food That was all the rage for at least the time that the 1939 World's Fair was open. And afterwards, the manager of that restaurant opened his own place in New York, which he called Le Pavillon. And it set standards which even today, if you go into the typical French restaurant in the United States, or even continental restaurant, you will, by and large, 9 times out of 10, see 90% of the items that were on Le Pavillon's menu. And his name was Henri Soule. And I would have loved to have dined there, but unfortunately went out of business in 1971, at which time I was still eating in Indian restaurants and little ethnic places and brown rice and trying to get through the counterculture.
Okay. Well, John Mariani, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, it's great. It's been a great, great pleasure. Thank you, Terry.
John Mariani is the food and travel writer for Esquire magazine and the author of the new book, America Eats Out. This is Fresh Air.